but afterwards if it's something that would be helpful to you. So let's get going. This is a fairly short meeting because, as you know, we're going to have a presentation from Marianne Dickerson starting at 1, and it's sort of the end of our meeting and the beginning of the advisory group meeting, so that she can address both the people at the both groups at the same time. But the agenda that we have, does anybody want to propose any changes to it? Well, hearing none, let's move forward. Also, we sent out the notes from the February meeting, because you'll recall March meeting was canceled. Were there any concerns about that we need to address? And again, thanks to the DPH folks for putting together those notes. Okay, well, thank you. Hearing none.
Motion to approve.
Okay, we can. I've always been pretty lax about them because they're not minutes; they're just notes.
But we at least accept them and then get them posted.
Sure. Okay. Can I hear a motion to accept the notes from our February meeting?
So we'll make that motion.
Okay. Thank you, Denise. Second. Okay. Great. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, so our notes are accepted. Mike, you had indicated to me that you would do a brief update from the domestic wells group. You are muted at the moment. Okay.
Yes, thanks, Virginia. So we did have a meeting in the past month or so with our small group. And the main reason that we did not call a meeting, and I did send some notification of this to you and Dave and Lori and a few others, I think. So Corinne and I had scheduled a meeting with some folks from DEEP, DPH, and DCP. And Jason Cohen came from DCP and basically told us that they had built a database to be able to handle new entries for private well installation. So we all kind of sat there for a minute with our mouths hanging open and pretty shocked, because it's pretty far along. I mean, they have it in draft format. He gave us a link to be able to test it out and provide feedback to him on it. But it sounds like they're, from what he had said at that time, and again, this was before everything happened with COVID, but they were planning on bringing this to the Plumbing and Piping Board, their first summer meeting, I guess it was, to get their feedback and hopeful approval. And we're hoping to have this live by this summer at some point.
And did your group have a chance to look at it and see if it included all the items that we felt were important or that you felt were important?
Yeah, Corinne and I both had looked at it, and it basically has everything that's on a well completion report. So all the key fields are there. It also has the ability to plot the data points on a map because they are requiring people to put in lat long to 5 digits on there too.
Excellent.
Which is great. So this was really great news, and we're very excited about it. It's great news for everything going forward. And I guess that's one part of it. The other great news is they have basically committed to managing this database. So there, you know, that was the other piece that we were concerned about, that who's going to take ownership of it. It costs money. It's people. So them taking ownership of that database is huge. So those two very big things were really encouraging to us. The other piece of all of the older records is still in question. So at that point in time, Corinne, and you can add to this too if you'd like, I know that there were old records that were being, you know, paper copies out of DEEP, and it sounds like they were just going to be scanning them in like they did the rest of the well completion reports that are available through DCP. So they, you know, they're not going to be, they don't have the funding or ability to do any more with them at this point. So they're going to be scanned in. So we still would need to look for funding to have someone enter in all of those old records. And given the current situation, I'm extremely doubtful that there's going to be any extra funding for anything like this.
Well, Mike, that's the short version. Dave Radka here.
Sure.
Mike, two questions. Dave Radka. That is great news. The two questions are, could you use your white paper to at least take a rough attempt to quantify what the level of effort would be to get those old data points put into this new database using, I think in the past you've talked about what I think maybe Mass or other states have done using some student labor or intern labor. Is that a possibility? And then secondly, does this format that they share with you, is that aligned with the proposed regulatory changes that are sort of slowly wending their way through the process?
So the second question I'll answer first, Dave. So I believe it does. And again, especially with the having the location in there, the lat long. So that's part of their new requirements, and that's definitely in there.
Okay, good.
Stuff I'm not sure about, but I would presume that they would be following their, you know, the most up to date, you know, what they're proposing on that. On entering the data, Mass had a very dedicated employee that entered most of it, I think, if I remember right. We have talked about doing it through student labor here in Connecticut, and that's certainly something that we could use the white paper for at this point to basically come up with some estimates on that, because Chris and I were both kind of saying to ourselves, so what do we do with the white paper now? Because the bulk of that paper was justifying creating the database and you know, putting this all together, and that piece of it's done. So maybe you're right, Dave. Maybe that's the best way to utilize what we have so far in the white paper. I mean, I guess we'll probably shorten up a lot of the background because, you know, we don't need to justify it anymore. But maybe that's the effort that we could make now, is trying to put something together as to what it might cost to get all that old data in.
And if I could add a couple things. One is that we need to, it's Corinne, by the way, we need to test the database a little bit more. It's basically a replica of the well completion report, but it needs some constraints put into it so that just to get better quality data and for QAQC. And we'll be working with Jason Cohen on that. Also, the Connecticut Geologic Survey, Maddie Thomas, is very interested in a lot of the data for geologic purposes, you know, to document the geology of the state. And she's been looking into some potential funding through USGS to maybe get some of the some of the older completion reports in. So we're still exploring that angle, and I haven't reported that yet back to the work group, so that's probably news to Mike, but it is something that we're working on. And in terms of, the Department of Consumer Protection has scanned in and many of the well completion reports from 1970 through recent, and that's available on their website. It's very hard to find anything because they're not searchable, but we'll be able to use them to backfill the database piece of it. And then DEEP has older completion reports between 1950 and 70. In our files, and we're getting rid of paper files, and so those will be scanned similar to what DCP has already done for the more recent well completion reports. So we will at least have a good data set to enter into the database, and I think we've got some possibilities for getting the completion reports into the database. So there's still a fair bit of work to do, but I think we're making progress.
Did you all see Brenda's comment about whether GIS folks still need to put in a certain number of hours to maintain their certification, because that might be another source of labor to do some of this.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that one. I'm not sure.
So Mike, Brenda, can you be in touch with Mike after the meeting? Or Mike, can you be in touch
you're
with
muted.
Brenda? She's muted.
Brenda, you're muted.
Yes, hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I would be happy to do that. I know that we actually had some mapping done for us for free a number of years ago through Planimetrics and Outfit out in Avon. And the person that I worked with volunteered his hours each year as a means to maintain his his certification. So I'm happy to work with Mike on that.
Excellent. Thank you for that suggestion.
Thank you.
Hi, and Mike, this is Lori, Mike in Virginia, and Corinne. One thing, every year we bring on a crew of interns from UConn, and we're sort of struggling with it right now because of, you know, normally we have them in the office and get them out in the field, but obviously with field work suspended, you know, life's a bit different moving forward through the summer. So one thing I was thinking about, Mike, is talking offline with you about an idea I have. Dr. Robbins, we work directly with Dr. Robbins and Russ Baglioglu, directly out of the School of Engineering and the School of Agriculture. So right now we have 7 candidates that are interested in working on our internship program this summer out of Gary's group. All 7 look pretty good. So, Mike, why don't we talk, because there's a possibility that we could assist with some internships this summer.
That'd be great, Lori. Yeah, I'd love to talk with you about that.
Great. Thank you.
Other specific questions for Mike? I have a higher level question, and I'm not sure quite how to address it, and that is... Now, as we all know, there are several agencies and a lot of people who are interested in these data. Obviously, DPH and DEEP, and then Corinne just mentioned Maddie Thomas with the Geologic Group. And I'm frankly appalled that DCP had gotten this far down the tracks and nobody knew about it. Now, I think there needs to be some kind of arrangement, a formal arrangement agreed upon in terms of the communication between the various state agencies. It seems that this is good. It seems like they're going in the right direction. But the fact that other state agencies who are intimately involved with these issues, who find the data crucial for their operations, had no idea that it was going on.
I agree.
I think that needs to be formally laid out. And Jack, I hope you're hearing this, because I think maybe it needs to come from the likes of the Planning Council. I'll repeat that just in terms of the DCP had developed this database without letting any of the other state agencies know they were doing it. And
I'm sure it's something that Lori, are you on, Lori, there?
Oh, I am.
Are you hearing all this?
Yeah, you know, Virginia, part of me, I'm not appalled, but I'm just disappointed that they
didn't.
I'm
not surprised.
I am surprised. I'm surprised that they were able to do this. I'm disappointed that they didn't reach out to us. But, you know, also as a state agency person for a long time, you know, I'm not going to be appalled at another state agency stepping into an area that they are addressing. I'm very happy to hear that they're doing this. The good news is that we have the opportunity to take a look at it right now and help them. I was a bit worried when I first heard about this that they were already in the middle of it and maybe not collecting GPS information, right? That would have been very disappointing. But I think, you know, I'm going to move on beyond my disappointment, and I'm going to, why don't, Jack, you know what we could do? We could invite our colleagues from Consumer Protection to come talk to us. Maybe in a formal way, and we could form a partnership with them. You know, I think that they need to be brought into the fold of our team here, and understand what we work on, because, you know, I'm also disappointed in ourselves and myself for not reaching out and knowing that. We should have known that, you know, we should be disappointed in ourselves as well. You know, and me in particular, I'm now in charge of private wells. I should have known that DCP was working on this, and I didn't know that. So I thank Mike and his work and the team to work on this. But, you know, moving forward, I think, Jack, maybe we invite DCP and our colleagues and counterparts to, you know, participate more directly with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Mike. We can move along to an update from Steve.
Steve. Yep. Hi, everybody. So the drought work group has been meeting. We haven't made much progress this past month. We plan to have two meetings in March, but in the event, we had to cancel the one for late March as everyone was tied up with different virus response activities. And we only had the one meeting since last time we met, which was March 6th. I don't have a lot of progress to report, because at the March 6th meeting, focus was on a couple things. We reviewed the additional asks, if you will, from the Water Planning Council Advisory Group. So if you recall, we had three tasks before us going in. That was to review the statutory and regulatory authority and whether it needed to be strengthened of the interagency work group. It was the use of municipal drought restrictions, and it was review of state wide versus regional or local drought indices and responses, and whether they're being done appropriately. Those were our three initial charges. The Water Planning Council Advisory Group asked us to also look at, as we're doing this, how might the response have been different between the drought plan that we're reviewing in 2016 versus what's there today. How do the response should relate to the state's emergency response framework? And they also asked us to distinguish between state and utility responses. So most of our meeting on March 6th was spent going over those additional asks, and there was agreement that we could take those on and do them without impacting our schedule. And then we also spent a lot of time talking about our schedule, and we agreed that we would, we thought that it was reasonable and realistic to get a report, draft report, available to the implementation work group by November of this year. That is, of course, before we had the virus impacts on everything. Regarding our actual work, we're into the response. We're into reviewing the interagency work group's activities as of August 2016. That's as far as we've gotten. And I don't have much of an update for you. You know, through August 2016, we're finding that the interagency work group acted in accordance with the plan and in a reasonable way. We have identified numerous communication and consistency actions that we'll want to dive into deeper, but that's it at this time.
Are there any questions for Steve on the drought work group? Did you want to say something?
That was funny. Hey, Steve, this isn't 7350. This is RATCA. I'm not sure if 7350 is. But in one of your last emails, you had indicated about 3 to 4 more meetings to finish up your review of the 2016-17 drought. Is that, I'm sorry if you already went over this, but is that still your expected time frame, and that comports with your November draft date?
Yeah, so we're figuring 3 or 4 more meetings to get through the minutes and the activities of the interagency work group, and then 3 or 4 meetings to draft the report and think about it and tinker with that.
Do you have any plan for doing virtual meetings in the near term?
No, we don't have any plans, but that is what we're going to have to do. So that our last meeting was supposed to be an in-person meeting, and it didn't come off, obviously.
And the same question to you, Mike. Are you planning meetings to figure out what to do as a follow-up now that you have the information from DCP?
I don't know if we're going to need to meet again, even virtually. You know, we had kind of gotten to the point where we knew what we wanted to ask for, and Corinne and I actually spent a lot of time working on that white paper and pulling that all together. So I didn't say that before, but that is one other potential side effect that happened with this happening without us knowing it. We kind of wasted a lot of time on this. But I don't know that we're going to need to meet again. What I'm going to do after I talk with Lori, I will send another notification out to our group and just update them as to what the status is right now. I don't know that we need to meet, though. We kind of know what we need to ask for at this point.
Dave?
As in Radka, Dave?
Yeah, you lit up when you're speaking.
Lori, I have a question. I think it's for you. Previously, we had talked about the state actually doing another outreach to local staff to see who's their designated drought coordinator, and there was some discussion about sort of a default position that if people again failed to respond, that one individual would already be basically pre-identified and tasked with that unless deemed otherwise. Is that still in progress?
I'm not aware that has moved forward. I believe that Bruce, if you're on the call, Bruce or Eric, we're going to take that up as an issue. And
hi, this
possibly,
is Bruce.
Yeah, and possibly reissue that letter that was not well responded to. I think there was like less than 10% responses. So Bruce, go ahead, Bruce.
Okay, sure. This is Bruce. Yes, there was a conversation about reaching back out and also how to do it. As to the exact timing, I can't really recall. I do know that in the end, the COVID thing shut down the effort. But honestly, even before that, Eric Lindquist and I had been going around and around a little bit trying to determine how might we reach out to them. And the reason it was unclear is sending out a letter that got less than a 10% response rate likely will only get a 10% response rate again. And there was some discussion of working through COGS, working through the emergency regions and so on. And Eric has been in communication with DESP and others. We think there's a better way, but it isn't going to happen right now. And, really fortunately for us, we're only dealing with one major problem right now. The dryness that was increasing a month or so ago went away. So, we'll have to file the improvements to the drought effort, have to file them away for a later date. We're not ready to proceed with them.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce.
My recollection of the some of the discussion was that if a second letter, if it were to be a second letter, had a default option, that might get people's attention. If obviously it wouldn't be, but if we said that the default option was the mayor, you might have some mayor saying, "Whoa, wait a minute! I don't want that. I want to appoint so and so." But it might get their attention, and if it were the fire chief or whomever we may have been determined to be the default, may foster a greater response.
But it's a unique time that is happening outside of us right now in our state. We could capture people's attention because if towns that didn't realize their level of emergency response responsibility a year ago are now in the thick of it. So maybe later this year, to Steve's point, maybe it's a time to reach back out to them. Hopefully we're not through a second wave of illness at that point, but we should keep it always on the front burner that drought, we're watching the reservoirs carefully, obviously the groundwater carefully, and Bruce, you're right. there was an uptick. But, you know, we were, before this rain recently, we were sort of headed downward in a little bit of a downward spiral. And it's something worth carefully watching because, you know, again, we cannot be surprised by this. And that's all the efforts of revising the drought plan was to make sure that we are as prepared and proactive as possible. So I don't want to leave this to the back burner. I think this is an important topic.
Thank you, Lori. Any other comments?
I just want to say from the StreamFlow standpoint, things were looking actually quite I was worried before we got that 2 inches of rain and the major rainstorm, and my mind still isn't set at ease. You know, until we see how April and May shake out, we should be ready for some sort of response. So I think this work is important going forward.
Alicia, I agree. I mean, a leaf out is just coming, right, in the next 3-4 weeks. So things can change fairly quickly, and we should watch that carefully. And I think that's our role. And we should continue to think about how we reach back out to our towns and get them more directly involved. But certainly we have work to do, and we should be watching and monitoring what's going on, and we will continue that.
Okay, thank you, folks. I think we need to move on to the composition of our work group itself. As you may recall, when we set this up a year ago, and our first meeting was early April of a year ago, so it has been exactly a year, we set up our slate so that we would have staggered 2-year terms for members. And because of that, one group had just a single year term, and so that single year term is up. And so we need to know from the people who were in that first group whether they are willing and able to continue serving or whether they want to be replaced. And so I've just lost it off my screen. I had it up here a moment ago. Those of you who were in the first group, which were Steve and Bruce and Corinne and me, and I'm doing this from memory. Does anybody have it in front of them? Hang on, maybe I can find it again.
Corinne, Bruce, Denise, Brian Holbert, you, Virginia, and Steve.
Okay, so of those people, are each of you willing to continue to serve? Let me put it this, willing to continue to serve, and we will then submit your name to the Planning Council. Denise?
And Virginia, yes. You and I didn't discuss this in advance, but I think what we're asking people is their willingness to serve a 2-year term.
It would now be a 2-year term, correct. Yeah. And Bruce, you indicated that you would continue to represent OPM. Corinne, how about you?
I'll continue to represent DEEP.
Okay. Steve?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm willing to keep serving, I find it interesting and important, but just a little bit of devil's advocate, should there be some outreach effort to see if others are interested in serving? I don't want to hog a role here if there's someone, you know, waiting in the wings that's really interested in droughts.
So we're going to be moving on from droughts before the end of the year. The term year.
So willing to serve, but don't know if there, you know, we should have some kind of outreach effort.
I think Steve, Dave here, one of the things we have talked about is increasing our visibility outside of our group when soliciting members of our subject matter working groups. And I think that should be a priority of ours. So I'm comfortable if we stay with the same implementation work group members, as long as when we're working on a specific topic at hand, we really solicit others' interests and make sure we put together the best possible working group and most interested persons to be on it.
Yeah. And that's the way this group was designed, was that the real variety of expertise would be in the working groups, not necessarily in the implementation work group itself. Jack, I see your mouth moving, but I believe you are muted.
Am I now?
No, you're good now.
No, I agree with what Dave said. I think you should keep the core group the way it is. And, you know, we always have difficulty recruiting volunteers for everything since day one with the Water Planning Council and the steering committee. But I think that you guys have done a great job as the core group, so I think we should keep that intact. And if we need other people for subject matter experts, we should do that. So that's the way I think we should move along.
And then thank you, Jack. And then the other only other person who is on this first 1 year term is myself, and I serve at the wish of the chairs of the advisory group. And I don't know if you've had a chance, Alicia, to talk to Josh. I know you responded to the email that we were sharing just amongst the small group, but nobody heard from Josh.
I didn't hear back from him, but today, you know, during the water planning advisory group meeting, we'll get that all straightened out.
Okay. My understanding, and I don't know if there's anybody here who could, Tom and I were asked to serve, I don't recall that was the advisory group as a whole, but I believe it was just coming from the chairs, because I was never at a meeting at which it was discussed, but maybe I just wasn't there.
Well, the document that the Water Planning Council approved should have had that procedure in there. If someone can send me the final version of that, I can just make sure that we're proceeding properly. For some reason, I don't have that.
Okay.
And then, Virginia, lastly, we still need to talk about getting Brian's.
Right, exactly. That was going to be my next comment. Thank you, Dave. You may recall that Brian Hurlbut was asked to be one of the out-of-stream representatives, and then after he agreed to do that, he was appointed as the head of the agricultural, what do you call him, agency?
Commissioner of Ag.
Commissioner of Ag, thank you. And so has not been able to serve. And so we've had a vacancy for quite a while now, and we do need to fill that. And so ideas, thoughts, in the past, Joan Nichols' name has come up. I don't know if that's something that's still a possibility, but what are your thoughts? Suggestions.
Yeah, Virginia, this is David. I know we've tried over the years on these various committees and groups to get, you know, a lot of stakeholder and varied stakeholder representation. While it wouldn't be my first choice to have another water utility person as an out-of-stream representative, the fact is they do tend to show up and participate and contribute. And I guess I just offer that up. If we can't get someone, I mean, this has been well over a year now that we haven't been able to fill that position. I'm sure there are folks in the water utility side of things who would be willing to step up and contribute.
Thoughts about that? Whether that would be a possible solution?
Yeah, Denise, I do agree with David in terms of getting someone who at least has been active or somewhat knows what we've been doing or has been following it. And that doesn't mean somebody can't be brought up to speed, but and I think that there are some other out-of-stream folks who do tend to go to the Water Planning Council meetings, maybe on the Water Planning Council Advisory Group also, but and not to pick just from there, but I do think it's an option. So I wouldn't be against that. That said, I would still like to see if we could have another type of business represented if possible. And we know we've had trouble, you know, going after businesses in general. Agriculture is a huge user of water. We do know that. I think there are a couple other organizations within the ag community that we might want to reach out to. We reached out to Farm Bureau because they represent a lot of our farmers. Working Lands Alliance also represents a lot of farmers, so we could possibly reach out to them. So I think I'd like to see if we could reach out to a couple of folks before we close it off, you know, before we go with the water utilities.
I know that there are a lot of representatives of the public on this call. Are any of you connected to a out-of-stream using industry that's not a water utility?
Hi, this is Brenda. I have a question before I try to answer that. Have you attempted to reach out to a landlord association in the past? As typically what happens is the landlords will keep their water utility bills in their own name versus allowing for tenants to have water utilities in their names.
It's an interesting thought. Is there a statewide group or a sort of an overseeing group?
There are a number of associations, and I can follow up and try to get the contacts of those associations and maybe add those folks to the list of people to ask.
Okay, I appreciate that. Any thoughts from the groups in terms of bringing in a very different perspective to these discussions? Well, I think it's definitely worth investigating. So, Brenda, if you could send along some contacts, that would be great.
Will do. Thank you.
And thank you. Other thoughts? Come on, folks. You all have good ideas.
I shared my one, so I'm out.
We're all just waiting on Mary Ann.
And have we already talked to Mike O'Neill and sort of that group at UConn?
Good question, Corinne. Mike was a good participant during the state plan prep.
I love Mike and I work closely with him, but I think he's more of an agency person than a out of stream. So, you know, we were looking at a business or someone who uses water. I think looking at landlords or residential, you know, a different type of commercial use is interesting. Excuse me. So I'm just pointing out that this is an out of stream use and usually a consumer use. So. Excuse me.
I'm scrolling through an email from a year ago when we first found out that Brian wasn't going to be able to serve because I thought that there were some suggestions in here. Not finding any yet.
I thought the whole purpose, though, was to have a representative of agriculture. And that was very specific, if I recall, it might have been a specific request from the Water Planning Council that agriculture be represented on the implementation work group.
I don't recall that, but that's not saying that that's not the case. It's just,
you know, I'm sorry to interrupt, but why don't I reach out to the Agriculture Commissioner and see if he's got some suggestions.
Okay.
I mean, and I think that point's well taken. I think we wanted to get somebody from the agriculture community. There's people in the state that own some huge farms
that they run as commercial businesses that might be interested. So let me talk to Commissioner Herbert and get back to you. And between myself and Brenda, we should be able to.
Okay, that would be great. I appreciate that. Good.
Yeah, just to add in, we always talk about Farm Bureau, but there's also the Working Lands Alliance. So you might mention that to Brian when you're talking with him, just because we could have someone from that group if Farm Bureau can't make it.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you. And then, I'll wait to hear back from you on that, and hopefully we can have some specific names or suggestions at our next meeting. The other thing that was on our agenda was the update on the website. Bruce, do you want to mention that at all?
Hi, I was busy unmuting my phone when you said my name, and I don't know what you said after that.
The update on the progress of the website, the Water Planning Council website.
I believe Eric Lindquist has a draft of an updated web page, but nothing ready for prime time yet. It is something he's been working on. At this point, where I'm not seeing people every day, I tend to be a little more oblivious to where things currently stand. It was something, though, as of at least a few weeks ago, he was working on.
I can add to that. I talked to Eric late last week, and he gave me the link to the beta site of what he's working on, and it looks very good. What I check, obviously, first of all, is whether this group is on the site, and because the one that's public, it's not. And yes, it is. The advisory group is on the site, as is the implementation work group. All the old ones are not. The steering committee, the science and technical group, all the ones that were part of the state water plan are not there, which is appropriate. And then there's a link to documents, and in that link he had the agendas and the notes from our meetings up through February, which was the latest one that we had. He also had similar information for the advisory group. He had, or he now has, sort of the synopsis of the purpose of what each of these groups does. I mean, why is he now has it is because he asked me for it and I sent it to him. He also said that it was extraordinarily difficult to work on website remotely, that he has to log in. He can't do it from his home computer. He has to log in remotely to the office computer, and there are another number of other people doing that, and so there's just the traffic jam becomes unworkable. He said he's tried it occasionally at 10 o'clock at night, and it's better, but other people have the same idea. Whether he's going to try 2 o'clock in the morning, I don't know, but he said that that's a particular frustration of his, but it seems to be in pretty good shape, and it's what he's got. He's populated onto that site. So if any of you have information that should be included, then you send it to him, because he is looking to flesh that out fairly as much as possible. Okay, so we have gotten to the end of our scheduled meeting. The plan was to take a 15-minute break, and Marianne's presentation. Marianne's joining us is scheduled to start, and then we'll go for an hour. So thank you all, and our next plan meeting, which we'll see whether it's in person or Zoom. I'm guessing it's all going to be Zoom. Would be the third Tuesday of May, and whatever date that
who's
is.
Who's Patrick?
Pat.
Is Patrick?
We don't know what you're doing demolition on there, but if you could mute your line, that would be great. Pat,
I'm trying to break things.
Oh, Pat.
Of course it's that Patrick. Who else would it be?
So, did you want to take any public comment before I hit the pause button on the recording so that we can all take a quick break before the next meeting? How are we going to do this?
Well, I would say if there's any public comment that is directly related to the working of this group, I would welcome it at this point.
We also, Virginia, just want to point out Mary Ann did join us. So for the folks who are going to stick around just to work through the mechanics of making sure her presentation is viewable, I don't know if you want to do that before we all log off or coordinate that.
Sure.
Okay. So Mary Ann, we see your name, but not your face.
Hi there. You want to see my face? Okay. Here we go.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
Hi there. Good to see you.
So if there's no public comment, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to hit pause on the recording. And let's just verify that.
Are we just, Virginia, just so we're all clear, are we all staying on this Zoom meeting for that presentation?
Yes.
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 All right, I'm going to go ahead and hit pause recording. And second of all, can I just ask that everyone, if you are not speaking, please mute yourself. And the mute button's down on the lower left-hand corner of the screen. So please put yourself on mute. I'm sorry, Mary Ann, I just wanted to make sure that you weren't interrupted by any background noise.
Sure, thank you. Want me to start again?
Yes, go ahead. That would be good. I apologize for not starting the recording. Please do.
No problem. No problem. Happy to do it. So thank you for this opportunity to address everybody in this virtual format to hopefully start a discussion about how we'll move forward in designing water conservation recommendations for the Connecticut Water Plan. You know, I'd like this to be a very collaborative process. I'm a big fan of doing things in person. So this is very hard for me to do it virtually, but I think everybody is coping with the same issues. Just a few words about the project description for those who are not familiar with how this all came about. There was a $50,000 grant that was provided by Connecticut Water in their merger application with San Jose Water that was before PURA. And the purpose of this grant was to provide some technical assistance services to the Water Planning Council on water conservation measures that were identified in the state water plan, and to help the implementation work group and the other committees of the Water Planning Council to maybe undertake some research or look at models that might help drive the implementation of some of the conservation measures. And so as a way to kickstart the discussion, the Alliance for Water Efficiency provided 9 key ideas for action that we submitted in a letter to PURA in April of 2019. And this was while the merger application was before PURA. And the reason we were chosen for this grant was because we have a fair amount of experience in water conservation in North America, as well as prior working experience in Connecticut, too. We're not completely unfamiliar with this state. I spent the better part of my career working in Connecticut before leaving in the mid-90s. So there are lots of folks who are still there that I know. But if you're not familiar with who we are, I wanted to take just a minute to just describe our organization. We are a nonprofit organization with a mission to promote an efficient and a sustainable water future for North America. We serve primarily U.S. and Canada as the two countries we do most of our work in, but we've done work all over the world as well. We are a member organization. We have over 500 member organizations and about 200 watersheds in the U.S., delivering water to over 50 million water users. So we primarily have water utility memberships, although we also have a business and industry and government agencies that are members. So we do have lots of members in Connecticut as well. We have a network and a research focus, and you'll see by all the little graphics here that we do policy advocacy, we do research, we do training and education. We do quite a bit of work to support the water conservation objectives of our members and to help lead them through some of the difficult issues that they are facing. So some of the sample work products that we've come up with over the years relate to a lot of the tasks that we're going to talk about today. We've done state scorecard reports where we've analyzed water efficiency and conservation laws in the 50 states and ranked and analyzed them, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. We've created a water conservation scenario planning tool that we call our tracking tool, which helps evaluate the cost effectiveness of water conservation programs and how they end up not only reducing demand and becoming cost-effective investments for the utility, but also tracking what the greenhouse gas emissions reductions are and what the impact and changes are to the revenue requirement of the utility, all important pieces of information. We've created a rates handbook and a model to help utilities build water-efficient rate structures, but promote revenue stability in the process. And we'll talk a little bit more about that specifically when we get to the rates section. We've done rates videos for consumers because we know consumers can be a very difficult body of folks when rate increases need to be approved. So we wanted to help with the messaging to those consumers and provide tools to utilities that they can use to help get their messages across. You see a picture there of the Practical Plumbing Handbook, which is one of the consumer tools that we've put together to help consumers understand what their efficient plumbing is and does and how they can maintain it. We've developed consumer education and outreach materials in a program that we call Never Waste, and we'll show you pictures of that. We've also developed a water neutral development program, which I won't talk about today, but that's also materials that are available free of charge. And we've done lots of research studies. Mostly they're on practical implementation questions for water utilities. You know, what are the benefits of drought restrictions and how much water can they save? How do you transform the landscape and build a sustainable landscape model? What have been people's experiences in doing that so far? How do you better manage cooling towers to reduce the water load on cooling towers? And what are some of the issues involved in that? So those are examples of some of the research studies that we do. And we have a lot of information that's available on our website. And here's our homepage. You see this great shot of Chicago, but it also sifts through and shows you other shots as well. But it's a very detailed site that has lots of information about our programs, about water conservation in terms of resources, and news and events that help our membership move forward. So let's go back to our letter that we wrote to PURA back in April of 2019, where we identified 9 possible areas for action. And I think originally when the grant was envisioned, it was envisioned that we would attempt to do something on all of these. And so you see there are 9 different areas. First is provide an evaluation of existing state laws and regulations. The second is analyze options for water waste enforcement and compliance. The third area is review revenue losses that arise from conservation programs and recommend solutions for addressing that revenue loss problem. And then review and evaluate specific areas that are in the state water plan and provide recommendations for how to move those forward. And those fall into the following six categories. Water conservation education outreach, calculating passive conservation savings, which is important for accurately forecasting your demand, creating incentives for outdoor water conservation measures, perhaps dealing with some construction standards and provide efficiency in that, evaluating barriers to green building and green infrastructure, and working with the landscape and green industry. So those were what was contained in the letter, but the implementation work group had a meeting and identified what priorities they felt we should look at. And so, of course, we want to follow the recommendations of the implementation work group. And as I understand it, and, Dave and Virginia can help me with this if I get it wrong, but this is the order in which they would like the work done. So move through these areas until we expend the resources that are provided in this project. The first priority being reviewing the revenue loss issues that come from conservation programs that affect water utilities and recommend solutions for addressing this problem. You know, this is not something that's unique to Connecticut or East Coast utilities. It's even a factor for what you would expect West Coast utilities to not have as an issue. It's an issue everywhere. And it comes from a variety of factors, and we'll talk about it in a minute. So that's the first priority area that we understood the implementation work group would like us to work on, and we were happy to do that. Second area is provide an evaluation of existing state laws and regulations, and then moving on to the next three, analyze the options for water waste compliance and enforcement, provide recommendations on water conservation education outreach, and provide recommendations on incentives for water conservation measures. So we're happy to do that.
Oh, Marianne, this is David. If I could just jump in, I would say that this was our prioritization ranking, but I wouldn't say necessarily that we were advocating that they be done necessarily in any given order, just that we identified, for example, the revenue loss issue as being the number one, far and above the others, as a priority we wanted to make sure was focused on. Whether or not things were done concurrently, that, you know, would be up to you and what you felt was doable. So, and I think that gets to one of your later slides about how to roll all of this stuff out. But I just wanted to offer that.
Okay, thank you.
And just adding on that, I think this all came from our, we were really impressed that what you had proposed was to do all of your nine items for the $50,000. And we just wanted to say, if it turned out it was not possible to do them all, please make sure you do these ones.
Well, and that's a good point, because it depends on what you want from us. And that's part of what I'd like to talk with you all about before we start. There are many ways we can do this. I mean, we can disappear and write up something on all those nine areas and give it to you, and I don't know that that's necessarily very helpful. It's better to design something together with you so we really understand what you practically need. We're very focused on implementation at the Alliance, and so we want to make sure that that's what happens here. You know, we don't want to write another report that'll sit on a shelf. We want to actually design things that can happen, legislation that can be submitted, programs that can be launched. We're interested in an action-oriented approach. So given this list, what we want to do, as we have been talking about, our original proposal had been to try to do a little bit of everything, and I think you would prefer that we do the identified priorities first and do them in a little bit more depth. And we'd like to involve the stakeholders, and we'd like to do to comply with whatever process, you know, the advisory group and the implementation work group would like us to undertake. My idea originally, of course, was to come out and maybe do some sort of workshop, but given what we're experiencing in terms of our sheltering in place, I'm not quite sure how we might do that, and I'd be interested at the end of this presentation in your ideas for how we could put that together. But we agree with the implementation work group that the first priority should be the topic of revenue loss, and it's one we can jump into pretty quickly because we've got a lot of experience in this area. We found pretty early on that if we didn't help our water utility members with revenue loss, they were going to be quickly canceling their conservation programs, which we didn't want to happen. We wanted to make sure that conservation was viewed as the long-term benefit that it really is to the system, and to that, you know, reducing a need for future new additional infrastructure. And so we wanted to help our utilities cope with what they were facing in terms of that revenue loss. So what we did was we pitched a big program to the Walton Family Foundation called Financing Sustainable Water, and they did fund us to build a number of things that I will show you that I think could be part of how we would roll out this issue in Connecticut. So here's the program. It's called Financing Sustainable Water. It actually has its own website. And what it has on this website are basically three things. The first is a handbook, which we call Building Better Rates in an Uncertain World. It talks about how you design rate structures when everything around you is changing. And that's part of what we teach in our classes about demand forecasting. It has to be responsive to what some of those changing conditions are. And what we've introduced in this program is the whole concept of probability analysis. And the rate model that we've built, the sales forecasting and rate model, actually does probability simulations for the likelihood that you will be able to collect the revenue that you're scripting in this rate scenario, and what's the likelihood that you will be able to meet your revenue requirements in this rate structure that you've designed. And so this is a very slick model. You know, in a longer presentation, I would show you how it works, but that's kind of what we do in our rates workshop. And we've developed a lot of materials, which we now have put on a website called Financing Sustainable Water. And it includes consumer messaging and these videos, as well as a number of other how-to pieces. We have blog posts from utilities and case studies from utilities who have gone through this and have come out the other side. And so this is a program that we would love to roll out in Connecticut and have a workshop in Connecticut to explore this. Because there are many different factors that affect revenue stability, and yes, demand goes down from conservation, from active conservation programs. We know this, and you can plan for that, and you can plan how to address it. But there's also demand that goes down because there's what we call passive conservation savings. It's people going to Home Depot and Lowe's and remodeling their bathrooms and buying what's on the shelf, which now largely are WaterSense products. And so as they replace these fixtures under the national plumbing codes and under the WaterSense specifications, they are in fact reducing demand for their utility, which utilities often don't factor into their demand forecasts. And sometimes it's as much as 1% a year reduction. So it's something you have to really factor into how you extrapolate what your water sales are going to be. And then we've got, of course, economic recessions, and we're in the middle of a really big one right now. How we're going to come out of COVID on the utility side, there are going to be huge utility losses that are going to be reflected, and then how revenue is collected. In some areas, you know, residential consumption is up. If the system has mostly residential customers, they're not doing so badly. But anybody who's got commercial and industrial at water use is a big proportion of their demand, they are in trouble. I heard a recent statistic that the city of San Francisco is experiencing a 48% reduction in their office building use. I mean, that's going to be a significant impact on revenue. So we know these things are happening, and we know that when there are wet years, there's reduced peak demand, and if you've designed your rate structure so that your demand, you're relying on that peak demand because it's giving you a higher tier in your water rate structure. When you've got a wet year and people don't turn on the sprinkler as much, you're going to suffer a loss in revenue. And that's something, again, you can plan for based on probability analysis. And then cost increase. You've got increased infrastructure costs. You've got rise in fixed costs like staffing and insurance and energy use. And, you know, you've also got the phenomenon that demand forecasting is not taking this passive conservation into account. So all of this comes together into like this perfect storm. And this is what we talk about in our rates workshop. Because what we'd like to do is we'd like utilities to take a page out of Seattle's success story. And this is just showing them over a 40-year period how they increased in population, but they decreased in their consumption, but they kept their bill consumption level and reduced their non-revenue water. So you can conserve, you can supply more people within your population growth, but the trick is you have to keep that bill consumption level, and that's what we have to help people do in order to avoid the revenue loss problems. And there are many ways to do that. You've been talking in your materials about a RAM, that's one strategy, but there are others as well, and we'll be happy to provide you a suite of those solutions. But what we want to do is we want to focus on the utility revenue requirement. We want to make sure that's calculated correctly and that the way the rates have to be adjusted to cope with that is something to analyze. So this particular chart is an interesting one. It shows you in the red bars, it shows you each year going forward how you'd have to increase your revenue requirement to take into account the fact that you've got to reduce demand from conservation and you have to pay for the conservation at the same time. And eventually, you know, you see the benefit long term. But if you debt finance the conservation, it's a reverse flip. You actually save money in the short term until you run out the debt period that you're servicing your debt. So maybe it's a combination of those two, but it's tracking how you're dealing with meeting utilities revenue requirement. And that's the secret to making sure you don't suffer severe revenue loss. you can't leave the customers behind in all this. The customer has to be part of what you're doing here. And so part of our Financing Sustainable Water initiative involves some consumer messaging videos. They're 3-minute videos that talk to the consumer about what they're actually paying for when they pay for their water bill. They're not buying unit blocks of water only. They're buying a service. You know, my favorite quote is when a customer comes and says, hey, water should be free. It just falls from the sky. And you say to them, well, you want to go to the reservoir with your bucket? It's free. Go ahead and do it. But if you want us to deliver it to your house, tons of water to your house every day, treated and safe to drink, that's what you're paying for. So it's part of getting the consumer on board for the service that they're getting that's really an important factor in their quality of life. Then they'd say, well, but if I'm conserving, how come my bill keeps going up? And so this is a video that talks about the need for investment in the system, how long-term conservation will help reduce the need for future investment because it keeps, the consumption and the demand level, and so you don't have to build new facilities. And it's a great video for those systems that are experiencing some expansion. We probably should think about doing one for systems that are declining in consumption, where they're actually suffering from excess capacity. And so that's an issue that we will need to address in Connecticut as well. So here's the website. It's just Financing Sustainable Water, all one word, .org. So we welcome you to go and visit it, check out what's there. It'll form the basis for what we're planning to do on this issue. So where do we want to start here? I've given you a little bit of background on our materials, but what we would like to start with, we would recommend a one-day, 7-hour rates workshop. And we've done a lot of these in the past. Provide solutions on all the different methods for stabilizing revenue loss, and also gives an opportunity for specific examples to be explored. I know you're interested in the RAM, so we're going to bring in Dr. Janice Beecher, who's the Executive Director of the Institute of Public Utilities at Michigan State University. She's an expert in rate setting and RAM, and she'll be helping us with that. We will also demonstrate our sales forecasting and rates model, the one that does all that probability analysis I was talking to you about. And we'll do a specific Connecticut example. We'll recruit a utility who wants to actually get this free analysis. And if we can't recruit an actual utility, we will construct a Connecticut example that is sensitive to what the Connecticut conditions are. The workshop's very participatory, and we have, in the past, we've done panels. One workshop, we did a panel of local officials that discussed how you get to yes in a rate increase, you know, putting on city council members and local officials who actually are responsible for voting and having to face an angry public when the rate increase is approved. And I'm very sensitive to this issue because I'm a former water district board member who got pretty hammered when I was by the public when I was the tie-breaking vote on a rate increase. So I understand the ugly politics that rate increases bring, and so we want to help utilities through that as well. And we've had these rates workshops in a number of different places. Most recently, the last workshop we did was in Massachusetts. We were retained by the Massachusetts Department of Conservation and Recreation, and we did a one-day rates workshop in Massachusetts. So what we would propose is we would start with this rate workshop, and then after the workshop, we would provide specific guidance to utilities as a follow-up. And we can do that in a wide variety of ways. But that was one of the strategies I wanted to put on the table for you all to consider.
And Marianne?
Yes.
Before you go on to the laws and regulations, this is David. Just a question, and you may not have a good feel for this, but you went through your products and your various tools that you've developed over the years, and we've long been a member of Connecticut Water, and so I'm familiar with many of them. But I'm curious as to, do you have a sense of the degree to which they have been taken advantage of by utilities in Connecticut? And my sense is they're probably underutilized, and therefore there is an opportunity for us to introduce all of this, but I don't know if you have a sense of that or not.
So we don't have a lot of Connecticut utility members. We have we have Aquarion, we have Connecticut Water. We used to have Regional Water, but they're not a member anymore. And we don't have MDC, and we don't have any of the other utilities as members. So I think there is an opportunity to expand that coverage. It's very likely that many of them have not used these free materials. You don't have to be a member to use what's on Financing Sustainable Water. Because that was grant funded, that's free for everybody to use. But what we find is that if we don't provide that little oomph, that little help to get them there, they don't just do that on their own. So that's where the workshop helps. And when we did a workshop in Texas, we had a very large crowd. We had about 80 utilities who were attending, and we got a fair amount of participation from them, because they said, oh yeah, we knew it was there, but we just never got around to really understand what the benefit would be to us for using it. So that I think would be where we would start in Connecticut.
Thank you. And one more question, Marianne, if I may. You know, we had talked previously, I think, at a Water Planning Council meeting about if we move forward with this workshop, the importance of doing outreach to what I'm going to